Hi FM, your station of choice since 2008.
Joining us on the line, as he does every Wednesday, is Dr. Carl. Good morning. How are you?
Very well, thank you. Hi there, Dr. Howard.
So here's a question from a listener before we talk about anything else. We are in the middle of a very, very cold spell or snap here in Johannesburg. And one of our listeners wants to know why, and Roland wants to know, why temperatures drop seemingly so dramatically just before the sun comes up.
So what happens is that you – oh, by the way, there's an echo on the line. Can you hit the mix minus one button?
Oh, there we go. Okay.
There you go. Yep. So what happens – I'm still getting a terrible echo.
We're not on this side. So if you can bear the sound of your own voice coming back at you, which I know is always unnerving, but we're not hearing that at all.
Okay. I'll just fix that right now. No worries. So what happens is that you have the sun delivering above the atmosphere about 1,361 watts on each square meter of space, just outside the Earth's atmosphere. By the time it gets down to the ground, you've got 500 watts of heat when the sun is directly overhead, 500 watts of heat, about 470 watts of light, and roughly 30 watts of ultraviolet. Let's concentrate on the heat.
Mm-hmm.
So as soon as the sun goes down, the heat is not being delivered from the sun. That's the major source of heat for the Earth. There is a little bit of heat coming from the inside of the Earth due to the radioactive decay of uranium, potassium, and thorium. And then basically, the temperature just then starts dropping, and it drops evenly through the night. You might get a tiny bit of heat reflected off the moon, but hardly anything at all. And then the temperature keeps on dropping. And then when the sun rises, the temperature has gone to its lowest point. Now, think about the sun. It's way over there on the horizon. And the light and the heat, that's the important part, the heat, mm-hmm. is coming through not just your regular amount of atmosphere, but 32 times as much. We call this the OAM, or optical air mass, but otherwise let's just plain ignore that. So the heat comes from the sun mm-hmm. and then lands on the Earth, but it's at an angle and it's coming through 32 times more heat, as a result, very little heat gets on the Earth. So maybe for 10 or 15 minutes after the sun has actually risen, the amount of heat being lost to space is greater than the amount of heat from the sun. After 10, 15, 20 minutes, the sun kicks in as it gets higher, and then you end up with more and more heat coming in, and then you end up with the temperature rising.
Fascinating. Absolutely amazing. And I've always wondered that, especially when you go on one of these open air game drives and you start when it's very early and you can bear it. And then as the sun comes up, it starts to feel much, much colder for a short while. I've always wondered about that. So thanks for sending that question in. Let's talk about chromium steel.
Now we'll start off with rust.
Okay.
Now, have you had the experience of dealing with rust on a motor vehicle or a lump mm-hmm. of iron lying sure. around the house?
Of course.
Now, that rust of iron with oxygen, red, mm-hmm. that rust has two properties, which are both unfortunate. That rust is firstly not sticky. It's not adherent. You can scrape it off with a stick.
Right.
And secondly, it's porous. Mate, water and air just goes straight through it. So you build up a bit of rust, and the water and air goes straight through it, the oxygen goes through, and you get more rust underneath that surface rust. And the thing keeps on rusting away until finally you end up with nothing. Now, the thing about chromium steel, stainless steel, mm-hmm. which we used to think was invented in the 20th century, but turns out to be actually invented by the ancient Persians in the 11th century. The thing about stainless steel, it's got about 10-15% chromium. And the chromium rusts, but it forms a rust which is shiny, mm-hmm. so it's not red.
Right.
You hardly notice it. And it's not porous, and it's not adherent. It is very adherent, so nothing goes through it. So you immediately get the stainless steel as soon as it comes out of the furnace. It is it rusts within about a tenth of a second. And you can see this with a sharp knife. So get a sharp knife and then scratch a line into mm-hmm. either stainless steel or aluminium. And you're looking at it and you think, oh, it's a bit dull. And then look at the scratch as you follow the knife blade across the steel. And for maybe a tenth of a second, you can see shiny aluminium or shiny stainless steel in the scratch that you've made with your knife. And then after about a tenth of a second, it rusts to form a rust that is shiny, or not that shiny, but white, not red, and that is adherent and non-porous. So stainless steel does rust, but it stops as soon as it's made that first bit of rust. And the Persians did it in southern Iran back in the 11th century. Wow.
So that's incredible, because we always think of it as these massive furnaces that are turning chrome into ferrochrome, and then it goes into mixed with other ingredients and yet another furnace for stainless steel. How did they manage it back in Persia in that time?
Well, I'll give you a question. So I'll answer it with a question. So you know how at school you probably learnt the 12 times tables, you know, 11 times 12, 12 sure. times 12, all that sort of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Back in that part of the world, 3,500 years ago, we're talking 3,500 years ago, right? The school kids had to learn not the 10 times table, not up to 12, but up to 60. Because they had a mathematical system not based on boring old 10. 10 is right. So boring. All it divides into it is 2 and 5, and then it's not very useful. But if you're doing trade, well, a system based on 60 is much better, because the numbers that divide into 60, evenly exactly, are 2 and 3 and 4 and 5 and 6 and not 9, but 10 and 15 and 20 and 30. And so you've got all these lovely Amazing. Numbers. So they had to learn a 16 times table. So if you went to a school kid 3,500 years ago in that part of the world, you'd say to that school kid, "Please, young school person, what is 59 by 27? And they go, bang, there's the answer.
It's unbelievable, because we have such arrogance in 2021, don't we?
We think that we've got it all. But back then, I mean, we're talking about the people who invented writing. In Africa, we had blast furnaces over 1,000 years ago before the technology got lost.
Incredible. Absolutely incredible. And yet we think we know it all. I wanted to ask you, there's this whole new wellness thingy called the chlorophyll water. What is this?
It's a con. So firstly, the amount of chlorophyll in the chlorophyll water is zero. Chlorophyll is a molecule, a chemical. It's got about 160 atoms, and it's got four rings, and in the middle of the rings is an atom of magnesium. And this thing called chlorophyll is amazing. You know, it turns sunlight and water and carbon dioxide into trees and plants and oxygen. And even more amazing are the claims for chlorophyll water that will cause cure sunstroke, syphilis, varicose veins, boost your blood.
Oh.
And it seems, and in fact, there is no chlorophyll in chlorophyll water, because it doesn't dissolve. So what they do is they get the chlorophyll from the plants, which is not that hard a thing to do, and they shove it into this big fat industrial factory, and then they rip out the magnesium atom in the middle and replace it with copper. And so then is now a different chemical called chlorophyll in. So it's just got the letters I and N added at the end, and it's got a copper atom in the middle, and it dissolves in water. So that's the first thing. There is no chlorophyll in chlorophyll water. There's a similar but related chemical. Secondly, it's kind of like what happened with radium. Radium was discovered on the 21st of December, 1898, by Curie, Madame Curie, and her husband. And they, within, by 2010, by 1910, within 10 or so years, they were already selling everything from radium toothpaste to dog food to lipstick and fingernail polish, and wait for it, radium water, because they thought it was healthy. I know. And we're going through that stage now. In this case, luckily, the chlorophyll water is not as dangerous as radium water, but it's a con. And you see people on TikTok doing photos of themselves. Mate, what filter do they use? Ha. Huh.
Well, and isn't it just better to eat a piece of spinach?
Mate, you're hit in one, because when you eat the spinach, firstly, you get the digestion process going in your mouth, so you're getting more benefit out of the spinach. Plus, you've got all that fiber, and whether it's digestible or non-digestible, that fiber still gives you a health benefit. Whereas if you drink it, you know, you pay $40, you get this 60 ml bottle of magic gloop, and you've got no idea what's in it. It could have chlorophyll, it could have green dye, it could have plutonium, it could have arsenic. You've got no idea. It's not regulated. And then you squirt a couple of dropperfuls into your water and you drink it, and blow me down, suddenly you're free of sunstroke, syphilis, and varicose veins. Ah.
Which is lovely if you actually had varicose veins. Dr. Carl, that is where we do need to leave it. Thank you, as always. Absolutely fascinating conversation. I look forward to Wednesdays when we get to speak to you.